Good morning. It's Ted, it's Eric. I'd like to call to order the July 2nd, 2020 meeting of the TPA's Bicycle Trailways Pedestrian Advisory Committee. Pursuant to the Governor's Executive Order Number 20-69, TPA Operating Procedures Section 6.2 and TPA Emergency Order Number 2020-03, the Palm Beach TPA is conducting this meeting virtually using the Zoom webinar platform. The TPA selected this platform because it does not require the public to purchase or download any additional software or equipment to attend the meeting. Aside from the Zoom webinar platform that the participants will use to attend remotely, the public will have no discernible difference in their ability to watch the meeting from that of someone physically attending the meeting. Instructions to join this virtual meeting as well as contact information for a TPA staff member to assist you are provided in the published meeting agenda. Please note that although some members of the BTPAC are attending the meeting in person, committee members will be appearing at today's meeting remotely either via webcam or telephone. Additionally, scheduled presenters and the BTPAC liaison will also be appearing via webcam or telephone. Before we begin, I will summarize our public comment procedures for this virtual meeting. Written documents, comments, and questions can be submitted online at the website provided in the agenda. Verbal comments can also be made live through the Zoom webinar platform. When you wish to be recognized, please use the raise hand function within the Zoom platform and then wait to be recognized by the chair and unmuted by the meeting host. Lastly, an in-person visitor may submit a comment card available at the welcome table. Staff, please call the roll so that we can establish a quorum.
Can everyone hear me better? Yes. Okay, good. I keep getting messages that I sound too low. Okay, Sally Channing?
Present.
Sally, for you and Jean, you'll need to turn your mics on, and we do sanitize them, so you can put them close. Eric Ferguson?
Here.
Ted Goodenough?
Here.
Michael Howe?
Here.
Jean Matthews?
Here.
Yash Nagal?
Here.
Bonnie Nassar?
Here.
Michael Owens is excused. Craig Pinder?
Here.
Olga Pertho?
Here.
John Roach?
Here.
Brian Ruscher?
Here.
Bob Saban?
Here.
Joanne Scaria?
Here.
I believe I have Garrett Watson.
Here.
Larry Wallace.
Here.
We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Item B, motion to adopt agenda for July 2nd, 2020. Staff, are there any changes to the agenda?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We are requesting for an additional item 3B, Atlantic Avenue from Florida's Turnpike to Jog Road. BD&E study. We did notice this on our website, and we sent an amended agenda to all of our committee members.
Okay. Can I have a motion to adopt the agenda as amended?
I motion. Ted, good enough.
And is there a second?
Brian, are you sure a second?
Okay, so Ted and Brian seconded. Is there any discussion? Nope. No discussion. All in favor of adopting the amended agenda, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Are there any opposed? Nope. Motion passes. Item C, motion approved minutes for June 4th, 2020. The minutes have been are in your packet. Are there any changes to the minutes? Okay, seeing there's no changes, no one wants to suggest any changes, can I have a motion to adopt the minutes as presented?
Ted, good enough. Aye. Motion.
And may
I'll
I have
second.
A second?
Michael Howe. I'll second.
Michael Howe. Okay, any discussion? Nope. Okay, all in favor of adopting the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No, motion carries. Item D, comments from the chair. I don't have any comments this morning. Item E, BTPAC liaison report. Valerie, please. It's Valerie's review the liaison report.
Good morning, everyone. A few things to highlight today. Number one, we have advertised a request for proposals for general planning consultants contracts that would begin on October 1st through June 30th of 2023. Submittals are due by July 20th at 4 p.m. And the full packet and more information can be found at palmbeachtpa.org/business. The second thing we wanted to highlight was that the U.S. Department of Transportation is having a virtual summit on pedestrian safety to discuss pedestrian safety issues and actions through a series of webinars. The first one will be on July 8th, and then on the 15th, and then finally on the 28th. For more information and to register, visit pedestriansafetysummit.com. Palm Beach County is offering mini grants, the Be Well Palm Beach County mini grants, and they're up to $5,000, and they're available to Palm Beach County residents and organizations to advance community health and mental health, to launch initiatives or projects. There's going to be a Q&A session on July 7th at 5 p.m. To register for that session, go to bewellpbc.eventbrite.com. The deadline to apply for the mini grants is July 11th at 4 p.m. And for more information, you can visit bewellpbc.org/dowellgrants. Alyssa, do you want to? Okay, next slide. And then we are requesting local partners to provide their funded transportation projects so that we can include them in our transportation improvement program to show a bigger picture of all the transportation projects upcoming in our county. If you have any, please email them to Jason Price at jprice@palmbeachtpa.org. Our next TPA governing board meeting will be on July 16th at 9 a.m. And the final notice for that meeting will be available and distributed with agenda packet 1 week prior to the meeting. And that will be posted on our website at palmbeachtpa.org/board. We, just as a reminder, we do not have any regular meetings in August. And the next BTPAC meeting will be held on September 3rd. I have here the TAC, but our next meetings will be in September. And then we also, there's several conferences coming up that may be of interest, and we're posting them on our website at palmbeachtpa.org/conferences. And that's it.
Staff, are there any public comments on this item?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Do any committee members have any comments or questions on any liaison's report?
Sally Cannon. Do we still have that ad hoc committee meeting that's scheduled for August? Yes, ma'am. It is, Valerie, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's August 6th, I believe.
Yes, we don't have any regular meetings, but we do have the ad hoc committee meeting scheduled for August 6th, which would be the normal date BTPAC meets. And we'll be sending out that information 1 week prior with the agenda.
We have the option to meet in person for that as well.
That would be virtual only, but if you wanted to come into our office, I think we can make that accommodation.
Margie, is there any other raised hands, or is that?
I don't see any other raised hands.
Okay. Okay, there's no other committee member comments. I think we'll move on.
Chair, item F. Just to note something from what Sally had asked earlier, we, at this point, I forgot. And for August, we don't have permission from the governor's office yet to meet virtually. That may change, but at this point, we would only be able to hold it virtually. So we can't meet in person. We would meet in person only and not virtually. We don't have permission yet at this time to meet virtually.
Well, we're here. Sally and I are here.
Oh, Jean, if you, yes.
Sally and I are here. And set up, it's really safe. They've really got it spaced out. So thank you, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Item F, general public comments and public comments on agenda items. Staff, have any general comments been received?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, moving on to the next item. Item 2A, motion to recommend adoption of the FY 22 through 26 list of priority projects. Andrew Ulier, TPA Deputy Director of Program Development, will present this item.
Okay, go ahead. Eric, can you hear us?
Barely. No, I couldn't hear Andrew at all.
Okay.
Okay. You're trying to hear me now. Good morning, everyone.
I can hear you now.
Great. So I'm going to present the list of priority projects for this year 2022 to 2026.
Andrew, I'll be here for a second.
In four statutes for us, required for all NGOs in the state to adopt a list of priority projects. That's going to be set up priorities for the next 5 years. This one's starting in fiscal year 2022.
I'm sorry, Andrew, you gotta wait.
Marty, it's a little hard to hear Andrew.
PowerPoint set up, but I'll keep talking. So, thank you, Marty. So, just to rehash our mission statement, to collaboratively plan, prioritize, and fund the transportation system. We've been through the planning phases of our long-range transportation plan. We have our applications that are submitted for local initiatives and transportation alternatives. And then we go through the prioritization processes, and that's what we're doing here today. And then we'll be funding those transportation projects in our transportation improvement program. So our road to the fiscal year 2022 to 2026 transportation improvement program does start, pretty early time period up in July 2020, like right now today. That's where we start the process on the road to adoption for our adoption next year. Today is, I believe, beginning of July, and we just started our new fiscal year, and we're now operating under the fiscal year 21 to 25 transportation improvement program that you all recommended for adoption and was adopted by the board last month. So what we're working on today is really for next year's adoption of 22 to 26. So once we approve a priority list, that is then sent to FDOT, and that is worked into the draft tentative work program in the summer and fall of 2020. And then you all will see a draft of the draft tentative work program in December 2020. And through that, we review and ensure all the priorities were in there, and we provide any other updates to FDOT based on that. And then our committees and our board review the draft transportation improvement program in May of 2021, and then we have a final adoption in June of 2021, just like we did last month. And then we'll be operating under that new TIP starting July 1st. So what I'm going to go over with you today in this presentation is really just going to give you a general understanding of our three main product categories and how we prioritize those projects. I'm only going to give you the highlights for ones that are either new projects or there's been changes or recommend changes to existing priority projects. So you won't see all of them in this presentation, but they are in your packet. So I'm just going to highlight the ones that we've had some highlights for. So the three product categories we have are safe road modifications, local initiatives, and transportation alternatives. The first one, safe road modifications. This These projects come from our list of cost schedule projects and our long-range transition plan. And then we also draw these projects from smaller modifications that we receive from staff or stakeholders. And then we also look at some resourcing and bridge rehabilitation projects that are in the work program and see if there's ways to start including other types of modifications to those projects and either incorporate complete streets improvements, safety improvements, or other types of multimodal improvements. The funding of that is mostly from state gas taxes. So this is mostly state funds, and we get around $20.5 million a year of funding to fund the state road modifications. So in the work program and our transportation improvement program, these are known as district dedicated road revenue, statewide fuel tax, and public transit office funding codes. The next category we have are local initiatives, and this is one of our annual competitive application for multimodal projects. We have roughly $22.8 million a year, and this comes mostly from our federal surface transportation funds. So in the work program and our transportation improvement program, you'll see it's labeled as surface transportation funds with the codes SU, or the FDOT surface transportation funds allocation, which is funded with SA. Then our other competitive application process that you all are very familiar with is our transportation alternatives. And these are for non-motorized projects. And this is a subset of federal surface transportation funds. So this mostly comes from federal funds as well. And it's roughly $3.1 million a year. And then you'll see these codes listed as TALU for the DPA's portion of the transportation alternatives, or TALT for FDOTs. I'm just going to go through highlights for those three categories. So for state road modifications, again, these are the OSHP, they're small modifications to state roadways for resurfacings and bridge modifications when we find them. So some updates I wanted to give you on these. The first one is with the US 1 from Albemarle Road to Okeechobee Boulevard. So this was a project in the city of West Palm Beach, just south of Okeechobee Boulevard on US 1. And the original scope of this project was to convert it from a four-lane section to a three-lane section. That's a lane repurposing. FDOT does not currently approve of a reduction to three lanes from four lanes, so they do not approve of that reduction on their maintained facility. And then also West Palm Beach is still wanting to try to push to have that as a three-lane. But right now, until we figure out a final scope, and that is cleared and confirmed by both FDOT and West Palm Beach, we are recommending a staff to delete this project, and then it would make its way back into the, possibly make its way back into the prior list in a future years, once that scope is finalized and determined. The next one I wanted to give you an update on was US 1 Enhanced Transit and Multimodal Facilities, projects. So this is a line item in our priority list, and there's a bunch of sub items. So what you'll see under the US 1 Enhanced Transit and Multimodal Facilities are a lot of these products that originated out of our US 1 Multimodal Corridor Study. And the first one I wanted to mention was what we have in the back for you is all these requests to FDOT. The first one being construction for transit shelters along the corridor for premium transit facilities. So next we have the construction for lane repurposing in Boca Raton, the construction phase. And then we have to add the design and the construction phases for lane repurposing in West Palm Beach and North Palm Beach. And then lastly, another lane repurposing project in Lake Worth Beach. We're looking to have the feasibility phase funded. And once that feasibility phase is complete and determine whether it's possible to have a lane repurposing, it's approved by Lake Worth Beach, approved by FDOT, and then we can start looking into funding design and construction on that as well. Other highlights for existing projects that are already in our priority list, the Atlantic Avenue widening, requesting FDOT to accelerate the right-of-way and construction phases for this widening from Lyons Road to Job Road. We have Okeechobee Boulevard from State Road 7 to US 1. This is one of those other enhanced transit corridors. We are looking for program transit shelters, the construction for those. There's the state State Road 80 lighting from State Road 15 to County Road 880. There's a study underway right now that's going to be completed by FDOT probably about this month or next month, and they're looking to come back and present their results to our board. And based on what that Warren study shows, we're looking to program design and construction of lighting on State Road 80. The next one is Lake Worth Road Enhanced Transit and Multimodal Facilities, and we're requesting to program the transit signal prioritization on that corridor. And then lastly, we have to program construction and implementation of 8 new projects. So this next list, and I'll go through them as well, are the 8 new projects that you have not seen before in the priority list. And I'm just going to touch on them briefly. So the first one is Federal Highway at Spanish River Boulevard, and this is in Boca Raton. And this is converting a through lane to a through and right turn lane combined, and that frees up a little bit of space to add bike lanes in that intersection. And then also it would convert their current signal system to a mast arm. The next one is actually a series of 3 products that would be line items in the priority list. These are Boca Raton and Palm Beach County signal systems, and these are to replace span wire with mast arms and steel string poles. This really upgrades technology, allows more technology out there, and then it provides more resiliency for storms. Next is State Road 715, sidewalks, lighting, and buffer bicycle lanes, and this is shown as 3 separate products in our priority list. This is out in the Glades community of State Road out in the western portion of our county, and there's a few areas that we've seen that we've had for missing sidewalks and lighting and bicycle lanes, so trying to add those to those 3 locations. And then the last one I wanted to mention for a new product in State Road modifications was there's a current resurfacing product by FDOT in downtown Lake Worth Beach on Lake Ave and Lucerne streets, and the TPA is recommending we try to add stamped concrete crosswalks, replace sidewalk pavers, and improve drainage within this resurfacing project. Next, there's some local initiatives highlights. Again, this is an annual competitive application process, roughly $22.8 million a year in federal funds. All of our projects are moving forward. We do have 2 updates on current projects. The FEC Railroad Safety Infrastructure, so you all may remember a project a few years ago to upgrade safety along the FEC in the southern portions of our county. So this project is from West Palm Beach heading northward on the FEC. And a CRISI grant was applied for, so a rail and safety grant was applied for at the federal level, which is going to pay the bulk of this project. Then there's some money being given by Brightline, and then also locals, and then this is another additional $565,000 that is needed in fiscal year 2021 to fully fund that project. The next is a local initiatives project that was submitted last year for traffic signals to be added into the Palm Beach County traffic signal network. So this is the town of Palm Beach. It has 4 signals that they want to connect into the Palm Beach County network. And this was originally scheduled, I think, fiscal year 24 for construction. Town of Palm Beach requested to us to try to accelerate this project. Palm Beach County Engineering stated that they are able to accelerate this and get this done earlier. And so we requested through FDOT to try to have this funded a bit earlier as well. And so FDOT stated that they're able to accelerate this project to fiscal year 2022. So it should happen around 2 or 3 years earlier than originally anticipated. We then had 5 new applications in this past round for the 2020 cycle for applications. 4 of those were shown as prioritized on this next slide, and then we have 1 that is ineligible, and I'll talk through those. So for the 2020 applications, we did receive 5, 4 local initiatives, and the first one is, and they're in order of their TPA score based on our goals, objectives, scoring measures. The first one is the Palm Tran electric buses. So this is to purchase 4 electric buses and install electric charging stations at the maintenance facility. And this is also one that they applied for last year and received similar funding for. They have a goal of going entirely into 100% electric fleet, and that's one of the TPA goals as well. The next one is for trial service to purchase a passenger rail car. So they are requesting funding through us for $2.5 million, and they also requested through Broward MPO for $2.5 million. And then they're also going after a regional funding pot to also match that. So in total, they should have enough money to purchase a few passenger rail cars. Next is the Lake Worth Beach has a project on Southeast Coast Street and South H Street. And this is to reconstruct roadways to one-way pairs with 4-foot designated bike lanes. So they're currently two direction and they go to one-way pairs, and this frees up the space that had designated bike lanes. And that one's in Lake Worth Beach. And then our next two I wanted to mention specifically are Greenbrier Boulevard from Aero Club Drive to Greenbrier Shores Boulevard, and this is to construct 4-foot designated bike lanes. This one scored 22.6 points total in our scoring rubric. In our program overview, we set a standard of 25 as a minimum threshold in that. Right now, the staff has recommended to keep it on the priority list, but we wanted to flag it to let you all know about that. There is still funding available. So based on the four projects I mentioned before, you're looking at around $15 million in total. So there's still funding available. So we are recommending it to move forward with this project as well. And the last one is West Palm Beach, submitted from Mercer Avenue from Australian Avenue to Center Park Boulevard. And this is a segment that goes under 95. This is to add bike lanes and some complete streets components. This project we deemed ineligible at this time because additional public outreach is required. So some of our applicants submit projects that are along residential areas, and this is one of them. So when they are abutting single-family residential areas where the driveways are going into the roadway, we require a larger public outreach and approval by those property owners. So down the line, we don't run into any resistance with those products like we've seen in a few other products in our county and in District 4. So once they have that approved, they can resubmit next year and be prioritized, possibly. Transportation alternatives. So all these projects are moving forward. There's 6 new applications that the BTPAC you all have seen, 4 of those being prioritized. And then we have 2 right now which have insufficient funding available to be prioritized. And I'll go through those highlights. So for the 2020 applications, these are ranked. You can see the TPA scores there, and then you see the BTPAC rank. So they're in the order of the BTPAC rank. But I believe this year they matched fairly closely with the TPA score overall. But we put them in the priority list in the order of the BTPAC ranking. And to recap some of these projects, we have Lake Worth Beach has the ADA improvements and sidewalks throughout the city. We have the Kyoto Gardens Drive from Military Trail to A1A, alternate A1A, to install bicycle lanes and an 8-foot pathway in Palm Beach Gardens. There's Cherry Road from Military Trail to Quail Drive to install some pedestrian safety improvements from the Westgate CRA. Palm Trans submitted for ADA bus stop enhancements at various locations. And so with those 4 projects, we're getting close to we are at the total of about $3 million. $3.1 million in total funding available. So the next 2 projects we had, which were C2 Canal, Sherry's Pathway in the Village of Wellington, and then the ADA improvements, sidewalks and curb ramps in the Village of Royal Palm Beach at various residential locations. Those 2 projects, there is not enough funding, anticipated funding available under the Transportation Alternatives Program to fund those projects. In years past, it may have been sparked actually by the BTPAC in the past year, when there's funding available in the other program, like local initiatives, we've had recommendations in the past to try to get those funded through that program. And, you know, if it's the will of you all and then finally the will of the board, we'd be happy to try to get those funding through other measures. Obviously, it's a different funding source, so some of the eligibility might be tough to work through, but we try to work through that as staff. And then the timing of those products would be a few years later. So they probably happen about 2 years or 3 years after what you would get funded for transportation alternatives, which is you, transportation alternatives is usually about 3 years out of construction, whereas local initiatives is about 5 or 6 years out. So these would most likely go to about 5 or 6 years out, these last two. And that's all I have for you. If you have any questions, just be happy to answer them.
I'm not sure how I raise my hand.
Before we get started, Eric, I just want to know, and you're muted, Eric, that we don't have any public comments on this item.
Okay, that was going to be my question. No public comments.
No, and then so Sal, first, Ted raised his hand, then I have Sally, Bob, and Brian.
Okay, Ted's.
Okay. Just in the future, if you have a graphic of maybe a chart or a pie chart, please be more descriptive because I can't see it, so I don't know what it is. And you did a good job descripting everything, but I'd still like to know more about the chart. That's all I have.
Okay, Margie, who had their hand raised next?
So I have Bob, followed by Gene, and then okay. Brian and John.
So it was Bob, Gene, Brian. Who was after that?
And John.
Okay, Bob, recognized.
Okay, I was looking at the handout that was distributed. I don't quite understand this far left column, which is year and rank, and how that relates to these priority projects. So, can you give me a little more understanding there? For example, there's a 14-3, and that's year and rank. I guess it's the second digit is the rank, but I'm not sure. because the sequence they're listed in is not necessarily at least to the rank number.
Yes, I can respond to that. Thank you. So we started to track them by year and rank. So when we talk about priorities, we haven't typically reprioritized every year every single project in the list. So it typically stays in the order of its year first and then its priority. So that's why you would see like the year it would correspond to the first year it comes up. So, for example, we have these state road 7 ones which have been on the list for a while. So it says 04-1 and 04-2. So those started back in 04. Whereas these other ones, for example, if you have a 14-1, that means it was first on that list in 2014. So that's been the way we do it. If you have a recommendation for another way of showing it, we'd be happy to try to provide more clarity.
I think part of my confusion was that I didn't realize that some of these projects started as far back as 14. So that's probably part of it too. So thank you.
Okay, Gene Matthews is next.
I was gonna ask for clarification on the local initiative. There were less requests than money available, right? And so you said that we could possibly move something from transportation enhancement up there, like maybe the Palmtran ADA, even though we could step it back 2 years, maybe we could fund something lower on the list.
Yes, yes. This is, so when you go from transportation alternatives to, which are mostly for non-motorized projects, and you move it to local initiatives. Local initiatives is from surface transportation funds, and it's predominantly supposed to be spent on federal aid eligible roadways. So those function classified as urban collectors or higher, urban minor collectors or higher. So funding some non-motorized projects through the SU funding may be difficult. We have to work with FDI and get some some figure out how those exceptions work. We've had it done in the past, but entirely Trails product may be difficult. We've had products in the past, such as sidewalks and bike lanes that are on a local roadway, where we've been able to fund it through the surface transportation, the SU, the local initiatives. Something like a trail will be difficult. And then another thing I wanted to bring up on that is we have to balance with those ones that are prioritized. So, you know, if let's say one of them, the ones that are higher rankings, such as a Palmtran ADA stops, and they're scheduled for construction 3 years out. So if that one is eligible, but it seems like the one that can be pushed to LI, they may delay their construction because they pushed to LI, so we'd have to work with them to see if that's okay. So there might be a balancing act on trying to figure out which one can be eligible and when they should be constructed. So we wouldn't want to push them back if they've already been prioritized, so we'd have to work with a few agencies to figure that out.
On the local initiatives, you say, how much money is committed to be spent and how much is available? And if you don't spend it, does it roll over? And then if it doesn't roll over, could you give Palmtran another electric bus?
So right now it looks like we have around at the bottom of each table, there's a funding total for each fiscal year, and one of the columns is requested TPA funds. Right now we have around, it looks like $17 million in requested funds, a little bit in an earlier year. So I would say it's close to $17 million that's already been programmed. So there's probably maybe $3 million available.
Yeah. Does it roll over into another year then? Or does it disappear?
So the way that the AFDOT work program is created, they try to put every dollar towards something. So in those outer years, it could roll over a little bit. You know, it does roll over a little bit, but we try to program every single dollar available. So we typically don't roll over. It does happen. And when that happens, we've had other products move up. So, like, for example, we had some funding in an outer year available last year. So, for example, if there's funding, if you apply for a project and you're expected to be 5 years out for funding, well, there's money available the fourth year. We've had a few products they bump up. So, and that very well could happen. We have to see how the money plays out and the programming plays out when FDOT finds out how much money is available. And if there is more money available in an earlier year, especially for these applicants that is applied, they may be expecting 5 years out, but money might be a little available 4 years out. So we work with them to see if we could try to accelerate that product. If it meets their ability to deliver that product, then we would try to fund it a little earlier. But for the most part, we try to program every single dollar available without rolling over.
My last comment is I take the turnpike at Atlantic often, and there's two straight lanes and no dedicated right turn lanes. So the first car will go straight, and then the 20 cars behind it will make a right turn. So those improvements are so needed. It really backs up.
Okay, Brian Ruscher.
I'm going to go ahead and lower my hand. Gene took care of all the questions that I had. Thank you, Gene.
Okay, it was John Roach. Rauch? You're muted, John.
There we go. Good morning, John Roach. I'm sure it'll come as no surprise, but with the inclusion of the State Route 7 extensions and widening projects and so forth, as they're currently listed in the proposed priority lists, and the city's continued opposition, you know, obviously I think it's expected that I won't be able to support the list of priority projects as it's currently drafted. But also I wanted to emphasize one thing that Andrew discussed earlier was with regards to the South Dixie Highway project and the lane elimination. It is the city's position that we'll continue to work forward with FDOT to try and bring that project back, and get that project moving forward again. So it's unfortunate that it's being eliminated from the list of projects at this point, but we're going to continue to push forward with FDOT to try and make that happen. So Just want to put those comments on the record.
Thank you, John. Margie, any other raised hands?
I have Fadi has his hand.
Okay. Fadi?
Your computer, Fadi. You use the computer audio this time? Fadi, you need to unmute on your computer. You switched this meeting.
Yeah, I think he is using his computer this time. He said.
Yes, he's used to his phone.
Yeah. Alt A. We'll unmute you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I switched to the phone because the quality was not very good. Couldn't hear very well. I think I mentioned before that, you know, we do have some kind of reservation of some of the projects. And typically, you know, when we deal with land repurposing, I think the county's perspective is we want to make sure that we really have a real change in modal split before we repurpose. But again, overall, I think, you know, in spirit kind of cooperation, we would support the TPA project with those reservations. Thank you.
Okay. Any other raised hands? Margie?
I have Brian has his hand raised.
Okay. Brian?
Hey, yeah. Just for clarification on modal splits and infrastructure and lane repurposing, typically it's really hard to get a justification for a lane repurposing off of modal splits because modal splits typically don't change until you have the infrastructure that's in place to support those modes. People are generally not willing to accept to ride on an uncomfortable roadway until that roadway is comfortable for them to ride on, for a bicyclist, for example. So I just wanted to raise that in regards to some lane repurposing projects. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Anyone else, Margie?
I always hesitate with this group because whenever okay. you know, someone raises it, but no one else has their hand raised.
Okay, I've got a couple questions for staff before we go into a motion. First is one, Andrew, is there any potential with the COVID, with people driving less future, we have to be collecting less gas tax, and what would happen with if this continues for a while?
That's a very good question. Those numbers that we showed, those anticipated numbers, that's based on pre-COVID forecasts. The forecasts are done annually in Tallahassee for a multitude of revenue sources for the state. When we get confirmation about changes that we can notify you all about the newest forecasts that are released at those conferences. I'm not sure when the next one is scheduled to be done, but yes, what you're saying is correct. We probably won't expect to have that much money available. So I would suspect it to go down, and we have to work with APTOP to see how much money we truly have available when it comes to the draft into the work program.
Okay, so there's a potential we may have to come back and revisit this, you think?
Yes, and I guess I would say that it would go in order of priority. So, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it would go trying to get those first ones funded before the last ones. So,
okay. Next one was Boca Raton. We're very happy to see that some of our MassDARM conversions made the list. What those are LI? Well, they're state road modifications. How many years out you think they are? Like 5, 6 years?
Yes, if they make it into the work program, yeah, it'll probably be around 5 or 6 years out. Yeah. Now these are going to be administered by FDOT, so you know that might add a little bit of delay to it. So you could look possibly a few more years out than that. But it should have a similar time frame to the local initiatives project. Okay. Whereas if FDOT's administering it, you're looking probably at design around 4 or 5 years out and then construction 6 or 7 years out. So yes, construction could be 6 or 7 years out.
And my last thing is the West Palm Beach US 1 lane repurposing. It's kind of ironic, but I'm thinking through, when State Road 7 came in, there was a lot of concerns about the feasibility. Is the project even feasible? West Palm Beach brought up all these environmental concerns with the road may not be high enough, it may not be permittable, and we were told just, oh, don't worry about it, keep it in the work program. So, but then on the other hand, we have another project, which the US 1 project, and we're told just delete it, there's issues, we'll figure it out later. It just doesn't strike me as very fair, and I'm also kind of concerned because Boca, we have a US 1 lane repurposing project in study. I know the TPA, we all spent a lot of time, TPA spent a lot of effort to study the entire US 1 corridor for these type of projects. So I'm just, could you take us through the scenario of what would happen if we decided, if we recommended not to delete it? Is that a possibility? To, if we have an issue with DOT and we want to move it out to a future year?
Eric, I can chime in on this. And actually, I think it's a lesson learned for future lane repurposing projects. This project, it was planned in 2015, and now it's ready to go into construction. Because there hasn't been, I guess, kind of ongoing education and information to the businesses and local residents along the corridor, it came to a surprise now that 5 years have gone by that this was going into place. And the primary reason this was, DOT looked at it again and decided to say we can move forward either with a four-lane road and see what improvements we can do, or we need to delete this and you need to try again, is that a lot of public opposition arose to the project, and DOT received a lot. We received letters, they received letters, calls, the public meeting that DOT held before moving forward with the final construction and design was a lot of angry people. So DOT felt, you know, this needs to be revisited, and they did a limited revised traffic study, and that traffic study said, you know, there's issues at certain points, it's not wise to move forward, and it was kind of, you know, it's kind of at the final hour. So I think that, and the city of West Palm Beach decided, you know, we'd rather try this again than to just go forward with basically a resurfacing with some improvements. Because once they come in and do that, those have to stay there for the life of the project. So I think we tried to push it out with FDOT, but they said, you know, this is supposed to go into construction in this coming year. So we have to decide now. There is not more time to push it out. So that's not an option right now. But I think the lesson learned is to continue to keep the project in front of people and alive, and have, you know, a clear vision of what is being proposed, because I think that was one of the things that the businesses and the residents along the corridor, basically FDOT received a ton of opposition and not a lot of support, a lot of vocal opposition. So that's what resulted in this project. So I think for the future projects like the Boca Raton one, there's outreach happening right now, there's design happening, you know, if the council's on board, that will move forward. But the city should continue to kind of keep this present in businesses and people's minds, and have clear visuals of what is being proposed, so it doesn't, people don't forget about it, and all of a sudden it's a surprise when DOT comes and says, okay, we're ready to construct it. So I think those are my thoughts in regards to this.
Yeah, but I'm wondering, is it kind of the chicken and the egg? If we don't have it in the work program, we won't get it. We won't get something either. Is it possible to move it out to like year 5 years out and kind of keep it there till things are figured out and the city has a chance to go back to the community? I'm just worried that once it's out, is it so hard to get back in? And just because DOT doesn't want to do something, do we have the authority to kind of do what we think's right?
I guess unfortunately they are the roadway owner. So I guess short answer two for State Road 7, they are in favor of that project. It's their project that they want to move forward. And this project, they're concerned and they're not in favor. So they said, remove it now. But if the city is able to prove that it is a project that's going to work and there's local support, they can try again next year. And then it would be in the new fiscal year. So the new fifth year when it's applied for again. So that's basically their chance.
Okay. Yeah, I just find it ironic that on one project that they don't have everything figured out. Oh, don't worry about it. It's a, what, a $60, $40 million project. We'll figure it out. But then another project, just delete it. So I guess that's my kind of final comment on that. So is there any other questions for staff on the presentation?
I do have that John has his hand raised again.
Okay, John.
Yeah, and I haven't been directly involved in the state roads, or excuse me, the US 1 project. And Valerie, you mentioned a couple of things, so I'm just looking for clarity. Was it the opposition from business owners and residents, or was it deemed that it wasn't feasible from traffic counts, operations, and so from the traffic study standpoint, you know, or a combination of their own?
A combination. I think that because of all the opposition, DOT got concerned, and they went back and did a revised traffic study, kind of a more concise traffic study, and they found issues. So they decided, as a roadway owner, we're not comfortable to move forward with a three lane. There's too much opposition, and our revised traffic study is not showing this as a good project. So they identified congestion and diversion to local roads, and so those are the reasons. But I think the community opposition, so much community opposition, caused them to take a step back and then look at it again and say, this, both of these things combined, we're not comfortable going into construction next year.
I mean, it does concern me that, you know, what changed from the first study to the second study that changed, you know, the outlook and feasibility of the project. And, you know, why weren't, if those things truly were an issue, why weren't they caught the first time? So.
Yeah, I think more development along the corridor has occurred, but I think the root of this concern really came out of not just those concerns with the congestion, but just all that opposition that they received. So for future, the city's proposing these types of projects on an FDOT road to convince them we got to have more public support and get those residents that are concerned or opposed to understand the benefits of the project and understand really what their concerns are.
So just for clarification's sake, I'm going to raise my hand. This is Brian. If we delete this project on US 1 and take the staff recommendation, and the TPA or other entity decides to fund a feasibility study, and what type of timing would that look like for the project to move forward? Is it 5 years out? Could staff find a way to prioritize funding elsewhere for that study? It sounds like the city still wants it and that there's still things to be figured out, but what is the timing for a project that looks like this mean for West Palm Beach or any other municipality that might have something like this?
It would be in the new fifth year. So if they're able to, let's say by next June, provide a revised traffic study and show that there actually is a lot of public support for this project, then, and they would submit that lane elimination application early 2021 to FDOT for review, because they take three months to review in central office and everything, and then if they approve, then we would put it in the new fifth year. In the tip, the next tip.
Yeah, thank you.
And just to clarify, so we can't force FDOT to do the South Dixie project. We could symbolically keep it in there now, and it would be kind of a message to DOT, but they basically said no, so at least right now. So that's right. Why we're saying
if you pull a permit for a project, you're not going to do it.
Yeah. Okay, Margie, any other questions for staff? Any raised hands on the presentation?
I don't see any other hands raised.
Okay, so I need a motion on the FY 22 through 26 list of priority projects. So one option would be to adopt it as presented. Is there a motion on that?
Motion to adopt as presented.
Okay. Joanne's first. Is there a second?
All second. Garrett Watson.
Okay. It's So the motion's so I have a first and a second, so we'll open up. I'm sorry, is there any discussion on the motion?
Chair, I have one clarifying point I wanted to make. This is Andrew again. What I mentioned to you all about those two TA projects at the end that have insufficient funding, that isn't part of the recommendation that we have before you. So if you wanted to go that direction, that would have to be part of your action, your motion.
Okay, Margie, do we have any raised hand, any raised hands for discussion or just?
I have Brian with his hand raised.
Okay, Brian.
Yes, I would like to see the two projects that Andrew is referencing included in the motion if possible. Thank you.
This is Michael Howe. I'll second that.
So, to clarify, is that a substitute motion that you're making, Brian, or are you asking for Joanne for a friendly amendment?
I would ask Joanne for a friendly amendment.
That's fine with me.
And
a second.
Thank you.
In the second, yeah, I was just Garrett beat me to it. I've been brushing up on my. I bought a copy of Robert's Rules. Simple.
Robert's Rules.
Trying to, yeah. It's a little bit to it, so I've been brushing up on that. So, Margie, can you repeat the substitute motion?
So I have.
Amendment. Can you repeat the? The amended
motion. I'm going to.
Yeah.
So I have the motion on the floor is motion to recommend adoption of the fiscal year 22 to 26 list of priority projects with a modification to add the last two TA projects to bottom of the LI priority list.
Okay, is there discussion on that motion? Margie, any raised hands on that motion?
I don't see any.
Okay, going once, going twice. Okay, so Margie, do you want to?
Yep, we're ready for roll call vote. If you're
going to do, we're going to do a roll.
Yes, a roll call vote.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Because we're conducting this meeting virtually, we're going to do this vote by roll call. Margie, please call the roll.
And Sally and Jane, just remember to hit the mics. So Sally Shannon?
Aye.
Eric Ferguson?
Aye.
Ted Goodenough?
Aye.
Michael Howell?
Aye.
Jean Matthews?
Aye.
Yash Nagal?
Aye.
Fadi Nassar? I didn't catch that on the audio, Fadi, I'm sorry.
Aye.
Thank you. Craig Pinder?
Aye.
Olga Pertho?
Aye.
John Roach?
Nay.
Brian Ruscher?
Aye.
Bob Sabin?
Aye.
Joanne Scaria?
Aye.
Garrett Watson?
Aye.
It passes with one opposed.
FY21 strategic plan. Valerie will present this item.
All right. Okay, so I'll be presenting the fiscal year, a recap of fiscal year 20, and also our fiscal year 21 strategic plan to recommend adoption. So the strategic plan is a one-year document focused on specific actions to advance our TPA vision and goals. This is not a required document by federal or state regulations, but it's something that we've been doing since 2016 as a best practice above and beyond our two-year unified planning work program to focus our attention on specific actions we want to achieve over the next year. We follow the state fiscal year, so that runs from July 1st through June 30th. We just finished the fiscal year 20 and started on fiscal year 21 yesterday. Fiscal year 20 was a big year for us. Here's a picture of our board doing a ribbon cutting in our in our boardroom. A few of the highlights from this past year, we became an independent agency, so we're no longer hosted by the Palm Beach County. We moved into a new office building. Here's a picture here on the right from at 301 Datura in downtown West Palm Beach. We adopted our five-year update to our long-range transportation plan for 2045. We also created an interactive comment map online, and we hosted several events, including a transit peer exchange and a Vision Zero workshop, which we're really excited because we have one new Vision Zero city. Congratulations to the city of Boynton Beach. We're putting together an annual report to highlight some of these things that should be ready for our board meeting in a couple weeks, but this is similar to what it will look like. On the left here, you can see our interactive map. On the bottom left, that's a picture of our February board meeting, which is our largest attended board meeting to date. We received nearly 2,000 public comments. So it was an exciting year. The annual report will also include some highlights of projects that we've implemented and constructed, as well as several events we collaborated with partners with. And then finally, our last goal of administrating the agency, our strategic plan report card. So for our draft fiscal year 21 strategic plan, our board created a subcommittee in May with 7 board members, and they met on June 22nd to review staff recommendations and also provide us revisions. And that's what I will be presenting to you now. So we have 6 goals. The first goal is engage the public. Our change to this goal is under action A, instead of creating a pilot interactive comment map, we already did that. So now our action is to promote the interactive comment map, and our outcome, we want to have 500 comments by June of next year. We also changed the wording a little bit on action 1C. Instead of conduct outreach events, we're saying conduct or support outreach events and campaigns. That's something that we're doing, but we just wanted to be more clear that we do collaborate with our partners and want to support their events and campaigns as well that advance our vision and mission. For goal 2, plan the system, under action A, commence multimodal corridor studies on transit plan corridors. We had a goal, an outcome of 3 studies in a year. We bumped that down to 2 because we realized these are our big efforts, and we want to strive for 2, but things are different now during these COVID-19 times. So we've bumped down that goal to 2 and hopefully get started on 2 corridors in this coming year. For action B, we changed the wording a little, but it's basically the same action, but just more elaborated. So we had conduct safe routes to school and walking audits. We revised that to say conduct pedestrian and bicycle safety field reviews, and to do this at 3 locations by June. So this is when we go out and physically review the roadway and identify pedestrian and bicycle safety improvements that could be made, not only just around schools, but in other areas as well. And then for each of these goals, we try to have 3 to 5 actions. For this one, we added a new action, action E, to create a complete streets opportunities plan. So to date, we've been reviewing upcoming resurfacing projects with the county and other local roadway owners constructing projects. And what we'd like to do is to take a big picture look at the county and identify projects, not only just upcoming resurfacing, but projects, especially on our tier 1 pedestrian and bicycle networks of our long-range transportation plan, but look at projects and see what else could, if there are opportunities to fit more improvements along those roadways. These could be lane repurposing projects if they are candidates based on current and future traffic volumes, but also roadways that may have enough right-of-way but are missing sidewalks and bicycle facilities. So we want to take a sweep and then create a compiled document divided by county roadways, FDOT roadways, and also city roadways that are federally aid eligible to put together recommendations or opportunities that we find when we do that review. And we hope to share that by next June. For goal 3, prioritize funding, we revised the language under action D. It said create a new TPA priority list for safety projects. we realized that a lot of our safety, a lot of our projects in our priority list are, do have safety improvements and are safety projects. So instead we want to identify which one, which projects in our priority list are safety projects and create and have that ready by this month, which we're presenting today with the priority list. For goal four, implement projects, we revised action A, and this was a recommendation by our board subcommittee. We had review FDOT county and city projects, designs to promote TPA vision and priorities. And our board asked us to be more engaging and engage our stakeholders in those reviews, and consider local preferences. So when we get, when there's upcoming resurfacing projects or projects that are in the pipeline, when we're reviewing them, we want to reach out to our stakeholders as well and get their thoughts and local presidents' preferences as well as we provide recommendations to those roadway owners. And our outcome continues to be we want to do this for 20 projects by June. For goal five, we have several revisions for collaborate with partners. On action A, we had researched existing mobility plans and fees throughout the state of Florida. We did that. We shared those results with our board subcommittee. They said, that's great that you did that, but let's put that aside for now and let's try and focus on other things. So we have a new action for action A to collect bicycle and pedestrian activity counts at 12 locations by June of next year. And we're actually working with Palm Beach County Engineering on this to get started and the city of Boca Raton potentially because they have cameras with new technology that can count. If you pay additional for the service, you can have 24/7, 365 bicycle and pedestrian counts within the roadway, people crossing the street and people using the bicycle facility at these intersections. So we're working with the county to identify the best intersections that have this capability and choose 12 locations to deploy this. So we look forward to bringing back more information on that. Once that's up and running, if anyone with the login to view that data can just log in and see that data and see the trends over time, including even weather for the day. So that's exciting. We're looking forward to those, to seeing that data. For action B, we had facilitate local walk and bike and age-friendly designations for our local municipalities with a goal of 3 local governments achieving these designations in a year. We want to continue to facilitate and encourage these designations, but because we don't really control the outcome, we can't make the cities get these designations. We're taking this action out and we're replacing it with assist our local governments with transportation studies and plans and have with a goal of 3 local studies and plans by June. And what we mean by this is when a local municipality wants to do a study, for example, a complete street study along a roadway or complete streets and mobility plan, we can be a funding partner to them for that effort. For action 5D, so under this goal, we had only 3 actions before. We're actually adding 2 more actions. So action D, we want to create a complete streets projects video to highlight some of the complete streets projects that have been implemented in Palm Beach County and in our region in South Florida, hoping that this will help raise awareness and actually highlight some success stories of projects such as lane elimination, lane repurposing projects, or separated bicycle facilities. And that can serve as an example for our local municipalities that are looking into potentially doing these kinds of improvements, but are hesitant. So a lot of times we have to point to other areas of the country or the state or elsewhere and say, look, they did it and it was great, but people are still hesitant because they say, well, that's not here. That's not South Florida. So that's our idea behind that effort. And we want to have that done by June. And then E, action 5E is a new action as well. And this was a request by our board subcommittee to add an action to facilitate a discussion of our long-range transportation plan projects and their inclusion in local comprehensive plans. So we plan to to facilitate that discussion and review local comprehensive plans and reach out to the local municipalities to see how we can align our LRTP projects in their plans and provide a summer report by June. And then the final goal, administer the agency goal 6. We made a new recommendation for an action under C. It was moved to a new office meeting space, but since we achieved that, we striked that. And our new action under this goal is to pursue a distinguished workplace designation. This could be maybe a bicycle-friendly business or a great places to work designation, but we want to achieve it as a designation that we could qualify for as the TPA. And our goal is one designation by June. So those are our changes, recommended changes, and the feedback we received from our board subcommittee that met on this on June 22nd. And that's it for my presentation.
Thank you, Valerie. Staff, are there any public comments on this item?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Is there any questions for Valerie on her presentation?
Yes, I have. Ted has his hand raised.
Okay. Ted.
Ted, I think
he's muted, yeah. I think Fatty raised his hand. We could go back to Ted.
Ted's unmuted now.
He's unmuted, okay.
On the last one where you were speaking of including people and making sure that everyone was a viable citizen, I think that maybe you need to consider inclusion works and or you're all welcome here, because it's as a person with a disability, it's very hard to know where you're welcome and where you're not. And I know that there's other issues in our country right now, but it's still something that you might want to consider with your monologue about who you're going to include. Thank you.
Ted, to clarify, you said the last action I mentioned, was that the workplace designations, or which action were you referring to?
You had an action at the end that specified gosh, I need Prezogen.
Valerie, I think Ted, you're going based off the inclusion language she used, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so Valerie, that would be goal 5E.
Oh, the facilitate discussion of the long-range transportation plans and their inclusion in the local comprehensive plans, the inclusion of our projects into the local comprehensive plans. Is that the one you were referring to?
Yes. And, I got brought into this group or committee because I'm from the community of the disabled, and I just think that there's a phrase we use, about us, without us. No, you can't do that. You got nothing without us, about us. So, are you considering speaking to the community of disabled?
For this action, it was trying to get our long-range transportation plan projects into the city local comprehensive plan. So trying to make sure that our plan is aligned with their plan in terms of the cities have their local comprehensive plans, but we might have a roadway project that's not included in that plan, or a transit project, and we want to talk to those cities and say, hey, let's try and be on the same page here. Would you, how do you feel about our project that we're planning for that's not being shown in your plan? I think that was the goal there, more of aligning the plans, the documents, so they're showing or they're telling the same story.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Margie, who's next?
And then we have Fabi with his hand raised.
Okay, Fabi. You're muted, Fabi.
You're going to have to unmute on your end, Fabi.
Okay, so the phone is not working.
Okay, you're good now.
First I think I probably want to thank TPA for all their effort, with the county is really supportive of their effort for improving pedestrian safety, for bike lanes, sidewalk, all of this connectivity. And a lot of it end up being, almost like a quality of life issue. Unless you do kind of urgent destination trips to figure out the trip patterns, a lot of these will impact a certain number of trips, maybe within downtown area, within specific area, impact the short trips, but not the longer trips. On the other hand, what I find really lacking is that with everything that happened now with COVID and changes and people kind of reconsideration of transit, whether I feel comfortable using transit or not, I would think an important part would be to reevaluate, those kind of what the public feel comfortable doing and basically the transportation modes. And I think this is really critical because bike and pedestrian and sidewalk are peanut cost compared to providing dedicated transit lane or more expensive transit. And I feel with everything that happened now, maybe the first criteria should be to do a study to reevaluate, all these changes. I know there may be something positive. For example, if people telecommute, the peak hours is less, there may be potential for complete street and other stuff. But at the same time, I think the whole push for, premium transit need to be reevaluated. Now, unless this becomes part of, the TPA, to educate all of us, I'm probably going to have a hard time supporting, because I think this is fundamental to the future to understand these changes of people's attitude toward transit, and whether it's going to last or not, we don't know. But I think this needs to be part of what TPA have to explore for the future, as well as the trip pattern to understand the potential for short trip that can be, a bike, maybe electric bike or something can play a useful role in changing people's travel behavior. That's what I have to say.
Thanks, Fadi. And just to clarify, when we say our 2045 enhanced transit corridor network of moving people in the most dense areas, we are looking out pretty far out. But in terms of our planning studies for our multimodal transit corridors, I agree, things are things that have changed right now and they're different and there's a lot of hesitation, but when we start on these planning studies, it is a long road. And even if everything were to move like this fast, the transit, there's a lot of hurdles to cross and a lot of things to achieve. And we're probably not looking at until another 8-10 years at the earliest. So, right now we're planning to get started on a preliminary analysis study because we agree it's not really the best time to try and, do a lot of outreach for, hey, let's, what's your preferred alternative for enhanced transit? Because it's just a strange time right now, but it's not only looking at enhanced transit. It's looking at moving people. What are the alternatives for moving people along the corridor that could include, designated transit lanes, but it's looking at various alternatives and then doing that outreach, which right now we're probably going to do next year, potentially on Okeechobee or the corridor studies we get started on, but looking at analyzing the different numbers and then getting that feedback from everyone. And then, and talking about, we're talking about 7-10 or more years from now for that. So it's a long road as soon as you decide this is what we want to push for. It's a long road ahead, but it's not just looking at transit. It's looking at moving people in bicycle and pedestrian facilities and cars and the whole picture. But basically, we've identified a network of corridors where we see there's limited right-of-way here. There's a lot of people that live and work along these corridors. We should probably look at how can we move people efficiently and safely along these corridors. And that's the kind of study we want to do moving forward in the next few years. But also thinking about this is for the future as well.
Okay, Margie. Okay.
Just one small comment. And I think, you know, part of what changed also is that a lot of people have experienced the convenience of having things, you know, instead of going to the supermarket, having stuff come to their home. So I think we have to consider also that maybe a change, that affect the number of trips can I go on the road and so forth. And again, some of it may be positive, some of it may be negative, but I feel it's important to understand the changes because we're planning for the future, but if you don't understand what changed, it's very hard to plan. Thank you.
Okay, Margie, who's next?
I have Brian with his hand raised.
Okay, Brian.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say thank you to the TPA staff and kind of echo what Fadi was saying about planning for the future and draw some attention to the TPA travel characteristics survey in relationship to COVID and look at some of the modes that were less users. And in particular, you know, of the respondents, people are riding transit at a rate similar to what they were doing previously, or I guess the change in transit had changed less than driving, which had seen the least change. And even then, if we think about in terms of transit, there's a lot of restrictions right now in terms of what our county has put on for riders. And I see very frequently Palmtran buses riding past people that need a ride to where they're going. So in my mind, with people driving less, we should be thinking about how we can increase capacity think about the capacity for transit as it relates to, you know, how much we've taken away from people for that particular mode. Because it is a very efficient way for people to get around, there are less cars on the road, and it is a more sustainable form of transportation. So just thank you to the TPA and to Fadi for being future thinking. We should definitely be looking at data and means to continue getting information and more data collection about the COVID pandemic out there. But I'm really happy with the strategic plan put forward.
Hey, Margie, any other? I don't see any raised hands.
I don't see any either.
Okay, is any other questions for staff on the presentation? Going once, going twice. Okay, I need a motion to recommend approval of the TPA's FY21 strategic plan. Or is there a motion? That's one potential motion.
Move to approve the strategic plan as recommended.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second. This is Ted.
Seconded by Ted. Okay, I'll open up the floor to discussion. And the motion is to recommend approval of the TPA's FY21 strategic plan. Any discussion? I don't see, Margie, I don't see any raised hands.
Me neither.
Okay. Having no further discussion, I have a motion, and it was the first was by Brian and the second by Ted, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And are we going to do a roll call on this one, Margie? Or okay. So, Margie, you take it from here.
Okay. Sally?
Aye.
Eric?
Aye.
Ted?
Aye.
Michael?
Aye.
Jean?
Aye.
Yash?
Aye.
Fadi? Did it come up on your screen to select on me? There we go. Oh no, I'm not sure, Patty. I do have it muted on your phone.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Does it have to be yes or nay, or can it be abstain?
If you're abstaining, there's specific reasons that you can abstain from, and we can pull that information up per the statute, but it would need to be either yes, no, or a reason that's covered under that.
Okay, no.
Craig?
Yes.
Olga?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Brian?
Aye.
Bob?
Yes.
Joanne?
Aye.
Garrett?
Aye.
It passes 13-1. And if I may, Body, for our staff's purposes, can we please have a reason for the nay vote? You'll need to unmute again, and I'll get it on here as well. Bonnie, I can't hear you. I don't.
Okay, could you hear me now?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, the reason is, I think, reevaluation of the transit. I think I feel it's kind of important, so that's the reason.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, objectives.
So, Chair, I passed 13-1, and you can move forward.
Okay, item information items 3A, Atlantic Avenue from Florida Turnpike to Jog Road, project development and environmental study. Most people know it as PD&E. Have Alexander Estrada, FDOT project manager, will present this item. Good morning, Alexander.
Morning.
Morning.
So what we have here today is just a small presentation. It's more like a kind of like a kickoff to the project. We recently started this PD&E study. So it goes from Turnpike to Jog Road. So you know, the traffic in this area is has been increasing, and there is currently capacity issues in the road. So we're looking into potentially widening this section of the road from existing 4 lanes to a 6-lane section. Currently, this is the PD&E study, and then we have the design funded in 22. Then we have right away in 24, and construction currently unfunded but a candidate item in 2027. With me, I have Rudy from Scalar, who's a consultant project manager for this study, and he's going to continue on and go into more detail about the study. I'm going to let Rudy go ahead.
Good morning. I'm Rudy Gottmare with the Scalar Consulting Group. I'm the consultant project manager. Our presentation outline give you a little bit project introduction, discuss purpose and need, talk about some of the characteristics along the corridor, and give you a schedule for this proposed study. We are here to give everybody update, TPA, CAC, TAC, and you all, since that the study has begun. We started the study around February. Our goal today is to provide you input, to get your input on this project. Just to discuss a PD&E study, it's a study that has three main components, engineering. Are we going to evaluate, do traffic data collection, traffic analysis, engineering analysis, look at safety, then look at the environmental evaluations and public involvement. From the day the study started, we're going to engage all the stakeholders, local residents, and business owners along the corridor, and then move forward by developing alternatives and present them in a alternatives workshop, which is currently planned for spring 2021, and then eventually conduct a public hearing that's planned for December 2021. What you see here is a general flowchart for any project that DOT starts. We are at the PDNE phase, which is approximately a couple of years, 2 years. Then we move to the design phase. If there's a right-of-way, which will be in on this project, we are expecting to buy some right-of-way. And then eventually project moves to a construction. What you see here is a project location map, Atlantic Avenue. The project starts at the turnpike and goes further east up to Jog Road. The Jog Road intersection is part of the project study. The approximate project length is 1.8 miles, and the entire project corridor is within the unincorporated areas of Palm Beach County. The purpose of the study is to address some capacity needs for future traffic as well as existing traffic. Also, we are going to look at enhancing safety along the corridor, not just for the vehicles, but for pedestrians and bicyclists. As we know, currently the corridor is under capacity. This project is identified in Palm Beach TPA 2040 LRTP, as well as 2045 LRTP. Some of the enhancements we are going to improve are pedestrians. There is currently a gap for the sidewalk along the corridor. And we're also going to look at providing buffer bike lanes in addition to the sidewalks on both sides of the roadway. What you see here on the screen are the traffic volumes, existing traffic volumes, as well as projected traffic volumes. As you can see, based on these AADT numbers, most of the corridor, even at currently, there are some segments are operating at level of service F. So as you can see, there's a significant need for providing additional capacity along the corridor. Please also note, this is a truck route. It's an identified truck route. Currently, the truck volumes are around 12.1%. So improvements that we are looking at, capacity improvements, widening this road from existing 4 lanes to potentially 6 lanes. We're going to enhance roadway safety. As I mentioned, we are also looking at multimodal accommodations, looking at sidewalks and bike lanes and drainage improvements. There are certain constraints along the corridor, right-of-way. As the project, there are some parts along the corridor, the right-of-way is limited. We also have a Lakewood Drainage District Canal on the south side of the project, and there are several utilities. We're also going to evaluate noise impacts because of this proposed improvements. So what's on the screen now is a proposed typical section. It's going to be a 6-lane urban typical section. That means curb and gutter on outside and in the median. We are proposing 11-foot wide lanes, 22-foot median, 7-foot wide buffered bike lanes, and 6-foot sidewalks. Bike lanes and sidewalks will be on both sides of the roadway. We are also going to evaluate alignment alternatives. One is a southern option. The reason we are looking at southern options because there is a canal and we can utilize some of that right-of-way. That's something will be discussed further. And the best fit. Our goal is to avoid any impacts, and if we cannot avoid it, is to minimize the impacts. So that's why we're going to evaluate a best fit alternative for the widening of this project. From the day one, the project started around February, we had developed a public involvement plan that identified our coordination with all the agencies, stakeholders, residents, HOAs, communities along the corridor, meet with the public. As I discussed, we're going to conduct an alternatives workshop and then a public hearing. A project website, as you can see, there's a link. www.fdot.gov/projects/Atlantic Avenue PDE. This website is up and running now. what you see here is some of the agencies that we are going to coordinate, and that's why we are here today. We had a similar presentation to the CAC and the TAC yesterday. We are going to meet with the county and several agencies that are within the corridor. In addition to all these agencies, as I discussed, we are going to meet with several HOAs, public, and coordinate throughout the life of the project. The next slide is a timeline. Started the project, you know, we're going to conduct an alternatives workshop in spring of 2021 and a public hearing in winter of 2021, and expect the approval for the project around summer of 2022. From the funding point of view, the design is currently funded in fiscal year 2022. The right-of-way purchase is currently funded in fiscal year 2024. The construction is not funded yet, but it's a candidate project for fiscal year 2027. Alex, as he indicated, he's our project manager. You can contact him, or you can also contact Guillermo, FDOT communications manager. With that, I'll open up for any questions. Thank you.
I'll just like to clarify something. You saw in the slide, the design is in 22. So the design is actually, it's all the way from Lyons to Jog Road. So the actual, this study, the PD&E study, is from Turnpike to Jog, which requires additional right-of-way. It requires a full study. That's what we're going through. However, the full design is going to include the section that is west, which is Lyons to Turnpike, that currently already has the required right-of-way, where we could widen into the inside of the median to add an additional through lanes. So I'll just a clarification.
Yeah. Right. Margie, are there any public comments on the item?
Hi, this is Jean Matthews. I take the Turnpike frequently on Atlantic.
Jean, we have to ask for public comments first.
Okay.
This is Andrew. Margie Sepulveda. There's no public comments on this item.
Okay, and go ahead, Jean.
I take the Turnpike frequently. And the traffic just stacks up there unbelievable. It can be like, you know, one car wants to go straight and the next 40 cars want to turn right to get onto northbound Turnpike. And we're looking at a decade before that turn lane could be in place. Is there a solution between now and then?
Are you traveling westbound on Turnpike? On the Atlantic?
I'm traveling westbound on Atlantic and taking a right turn to go northbound on the Turnpike.
Right now, I believe the county is building a turn lane on Atlantic through a permit that crosses that the canal.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I think it's under construction.
Okay, I saw the cones there and barriers. I didn't know what... All right, that's wonderful news,
because
that really will improve the traffic flow.
So, yeah, that's it's through a permit with DOT, but the county is actually doing that turn lane. But, you know, yeah, we know there's a lot of issues, congestion issues. So that's why we're here. We have a capacity project now.
Great, thank you.
Okay, I'm just going to go in alphabetical. I guess Margie or Andrew, do you know the order of who raised hands?
I have Garrett, John, and Bob as hands raised.
Okay, we're going Garrett?
Hey, I'm not too familiar with the roads. These questions may be silly, but assuming the volumes are pretty high based on what Gene just said, do you know what the current like 85th percentile speed is on that roadway? I know it's marked for 45. I have a street view up, but is it something that's traveled pretty frequently at a pretty fast speed, or is it pretty congested and pretty slow?
Sure, during the peak hours, you're not going anywhere close to 45, but off peak, I don't think we have a speed study in this area. I don't know, Rudy, do we have anything that indicates any speeds?
No, we don't have a speed study, but I think what you mentioned is pretty correct.
And kind of a follow-up related to the bike lanes, did your study include any observed volumes or anything for pedestrian and bike traffic, just to get an idea of what the flow is there?
I believe we had counts, right, Rudy? In the traffic data, did we have pedestrian and bike counts? Or no. I'm not sure.
As a part of the study, we are not doing the pedestrian or the bike counts, but irrespective of the counts, we are providing bicycle lanes, buffered bicycle lanes, and sidewalks, 6-foot sidewalks on both sides of the roadway.
In that buffering, the design section looks like it's double striping. Is that what's intended to be put out there, or were you putting a physical barrier out there?
Right now, it's just buffered bike lanes. Currently, that's how the typical section is shown.
Okay. That's it for me. Thank you.
Okay, John.
Actually, just kind of want to expand upon what Garrett was talking about, and I believe it came up in some of your previous presentations. You know, it looked like you had a pretty substantial cross-section in terms of width and, you know, whether or not, given the volumes and the speeds and so forth, whether this was an opportunity to do a protected bike lane versus just a buffered bike lane. And then also with regards to sidewalk width, you know, it'll be interesting as how people's behavior will be influenced, you know, given the COVID circumstances and so forth of, you know, could the number of pedestrians that would have normally been accommodated with a 6-foot sidewalk, you know, are they now looking for an 8-foot sidewalk in order for, you know, those numbers to be, to satisfy? So, you know, just rather there's opportunities there to enhance upon pedestrian facilities as well as kind of take the next step with regards to the bike lanes and potentially do something that's protected versus just buffered.
Okay.
Bob Sabin.
Hi, I'm a fairly avid bicyclist. And I know that this section of road is rather critical to get through. There's a lot of traffic up to the west. Lyons Road's an important bike ride. Jog Road is an important road north and south. So getting between these two locations is pretty important from that standpoint. How, on the other hand, you're just making it more a busier road, and then how do you deal with all the bicyclists? I do have questions. The road, what do you call it? The layout that you, it shows the three lanes and the bike lanes, and then on the one side, it looks like there's more of a sidewalk over there. What's the plan there, or is that just kind of like thinking about it? What are you planning at that point? What are you thinking?
Well, on the south side, if you're referring to, there's a canal. So we are proposing a guardrail to protect the vehicles and the bicyclists as a protection barrier between the travel lanes and the canal. And right behind the guardrail, we are proposing a 6-foot sidewalk. I'm assuming that's the area you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah. And the other side, I can't tell which is which, but the one that looks like the one on the right, looking at the picture, it seems like there's like a double lane over there. And the other side is looks like it might have been like a 6-foot sidewalk or something like that.
Correct. That's the guardrail. You have a curb and, you have a bike lane, then curb and gutter, then the guardrail and the sidewalk.
Oh, that's the guardrail. Okay.
Guardrail. Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So the, as far as from a cyclist standpoint, it would be a lot nicer if you, made the, section of, bike riding that's, furthest away from all the traffic getting on and off the turnpike. I think if you put a good bike lane on that side of the road, it would, that's closest to the canal, I think is what you're saying, correct?
Yes.
Okay. That, it just seems like you'd put more priority to, in that, from a cyclist standpoint to ride that side of the road, but. Also, think further, and this is to the committee. If we really had more transit between the east side of the road and the west side of the road, east side of the turnpike and west side of the turnpike, it would be a lot better, and you wouldn't have to use this section of road. There's a lot of traffic that we have to get between. East side and the west side sooner or later. And the flavor pick is a possibility. So that's it.
Okay, Margie.
And Eric, I have that Jean and here has her hand raised as well as Bobby.
Okay, you say Jean, and who is, okay, Jean.
To have a comment on the guardrails adjacent to the sidewalk. And that is on Linton Boulevard, when they redid Linton, they put the guardrails right next to the sidewalk. And I remember somebody from Palmtrans saying they just eliminated the availability to put a bike stop there. And it's safe for the people walking on the sidewalk because they're behind the guardrail, but I drive that road also.
That's a good point.
Okay, Margie, who is next? You said.
I have Fadi has his hand raised.
Okay, Fadi.
Yeah, I simply want to say, I mean, I agree with what John said. I mean, there may be an opportunity to provide more separation between the bike lane and the road, and that should be explored in the alternative analysis, considering the high traffic and the turnpike traffic. So that's it.
Okay, Margie, anyone else?
Let me just make sure there's no physical hands raised. I think we're good.
Okay, no one else? I have a few. I'm just going to, being that we are the BTPAC committee, I'm going to reiterate about the bike lanes. A couple months back, we had DOT come in that there's this great new the design manual, the FDM's been redesigned, basically strongly encourages you in these type of roads, these speeds and traffic volumes to be using physically protected bike lanes or certain context zones. You can even look at using a wider sidewalk, which is, I'm going to say I'm very concerned this early on to see a typical that doesn't show that being considered. So I think I'm going to be a little harder than the rest of the committee on that, but I'm kind of, this is in the beginning, and you guys come back, we're going to want to see that you really looking at physically protected bike lanes. And that is what the new manual says, too. Second thing is, I hear a lot of talk about automotive level of service, but I don't see a lot about pedestrian level of service. And the sidewalks that are there are very hostile to someone to want to walk on. So something I've done in the past, Elise, can you pull up the typical section again? For everyone to see the one slide.
Yes, it'll just take a minute while it connects. I'm sorry, we're just having a few technical issues. It should be up shortly.
Okay, if it's not, I can make the comment without it. It'd be helpful, though. So. Okay, so I think the one thing is, yeah, it's, I think we mentioned it's a 6-foot sidewalk. There's no shade. It's, you know, that's not that great. You have cars driving by very fast. So something I've done in the past is actually did it on a Martin Highway when I worked at Martin County because we had a school. We reduced the median to 19.5 feet, and that allowed us to widen the sidewalk because there was a significant amount of children walking to school. You know, this fixation on the 22-foot median is kind of a Florida thing. There's places that operate fine with 15.5-foot medians. I understand it may not be what's in the design manual, but you're giving a lot of space in the middle that really doesn't help pedestrians. So that's something I would suggest as you look at maybe a design variance to reduce the median in some places to widen the sidewalk. My other comment is I don't know the area well enough, but if you have a long linear canal, perhaps a two-way cycle track or a wider sidewalk on that side with the canal, because you may find that you're going to get higher bike and pedestrian use if that side doesn't have a lot of driveways. It looked like on the aerial that there was a lot of gated communities which have limited access points. So that's I think Bob kind of mentioned something too about that side. Then my last comment is that it looks like you're really trying to use up all the right of way. And how are we going to accommodate bus shelters if there's not a lot of room left? And just think about that, even if you have to acquire right of way to have, you know, good quality bus shelters to make people want to use transit. I think we should look at spending money on that. And, you know, Florida's hot, it rains every afternoon, so really having a high-quality bus shelters is important if we want people to use transit. So that's all I have. And Margie, anyone else raised hands since that, or were you?
I don't see any other hands raised.
Okay, no other comments. We can go to... this is just an informational item. So we're looking forward when you guys come back the next time to see what great ideas you come up to make a safe and efficient road for all users.
Thanks. Good, Eric. Thanks.
Yep. Item 3B, FDOT District 4 scheduling report for projects in Palm Beach County. Andrew's going to present this item.
Morning again, everyone. I'm just going to go quickly through this item. This is actually something that Larry Wallace and FDOT work a lot on, and this is really their report. I'll just give a brief summary of it, and then, you know, if there's additional things that Larry wants to add, we'd love to have him talk more about it. What this is it's been an effort by District 4 to provide the milestones for all the phases of a project going from the beginning of design all the way to construction. So I get the next slide here. So in your backup, you were provided this large table PDF, and I'm just going to go through a few of the main phases of it. So these are all going to be products that are programmed in the adopted FDOT work program. And Larry and FDOT's able to provide this to us monthly, so we're going to have an update every month. And what we plan on doing is putting this as an administrative item in your backup, so we won't always discuss this as an informational item every month, but if you have questions on it during administrative items, you can always just bring them up. And so I'm just going to go through a few main phases that you could pay attention to. There's a lot involved in the construction of a project, but on the table, the first one I want to point out is a column that's called PM, which is the project manager. And using this, you can actually look up all the state employees in Florida are on a website called 411. So if you Google 411 FDOT, you can look that up and put their name in there, and you get their address and their phone number. You can also contact us, and we can get you in touch with the project manager if you have any questions. The next is the multimodal scoping form checklist. So this is really early on in the process, and this is to promote early input via a scoping checklist, and this is sent to the stakeholders, the values team here at the CPA. Also reviews these, and we put our information in there, our comments on the project. And then the next phase I wanted to mention was the start of design, which is the time when we start looking at the scope and reviewing the design of the project. And then there's the first opportunity for design review, which is the initial engineering phase. So this is where we can submit comments on that scope and the sections and other information for design. And then one of those crucial steps, I think, is the next one after that initial design phase, and that's that public information workshop. So you'll see a column for public information workshop. And at this public meeting, this is getting around the last time that you can start providing scoping changes. So once you get past through that initial design phase and past that public information workshop, after the project team makes those changes to the design, that's really, you're starting to end what you do for a scoping change. So any major changes about bike lanes or sidewalk width and all that, that's really need to be decided around this time frame. So once you get past that part of the design, you start to head into other types of design phases involving constructability, which is more getting into the types of materials and then traffic diversions and other things involved in accomplishing the actual construction of the project. And then the last phase I wanted to mention to you all was the last column, which is the construction notice to proceed. So this is the time frame when construction is able to begin. And once it gets to pass the notice to proceed date, and construction begins, it's going to be taken off this list. So you won't see it pop up anymore if it's under construction. And that's really all I have for you all. Again, we'll be providing this monthly to you all, and then you'll see these dates change a little bit based on how well the product is progressing or not. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Andrew. This is Larry Wallace here. Andrew did a great job presenting. I just wanted to give everyone, too, a little bit of layman's terms on what those dates represent. Think of these dates as like a commitment. So the project manager is almost like your general contractor, if you will, if you're remodeling a house. So you have all these dates that are in that title, and those dates float. It's like the DOT is like a one big spinning wheel with projects, and then within that wheel is scheduling dates that the project manager has to adhere to. So as Andrew showed in that slide, you have the multimodal scoping checklist all the way through to construction. And within those, I think we just illustrated like the top key highlighted dates, but there's maybe 40 or 50 dates in between there that the project manager has to adhere to. So those are commitment dates. The only date important to all of us is the multimodal scoping checklist. Cause that's the time where the TPA can make somewhat sort of scoping, minor scoping comments to the project manager. And when I say minor, I mean like possibly like adding of signage, you know, maybe like we can look into turn lanes, you know, working with the local municipalities at that point in time is a good time to make early input. But when we talk about major scope changes, such as we want to go ahead and widen for buffered bike lanes or do a lane elimination or add a shared use path, that should be done prior to programming the project. So once this project is in this programming spreadsheet, it's almost too late for this, you know, for the TPA and the BPAC to make those sort of major type scope changes. That's all I had to say really for that. And then also the production date. Consider your production date almost like closing on a house. So that's like your closing. That's like your commitment date for production for design. And then once it goes out of production, then it goes to letting for a contractor. So that production date is pretty fixed as well. All the other dates can float. They can subject to change. But what I can say, if you look over some of the description and you really feel that you want to make some major type comments to the project, and you feel that it would be a necessity to make those changes, then it's possible to coordinate those efforts with the project manager, but that would move the project schedule date out. So keep that in mind as well. Andrew, did you have anything else to add to that point?
No, I do not. Thank you, Larry, for going through that. And we appreciate you worked so hard on getting this to us, and it's going to be a good asset for us.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a long time coming for this spreadsheet, and we appreciate two FDOT scheduling department worked, you know, months and months on this to try to get this user-friendly tool to out to all the TPAs and MPOs for them to review, and all the BPACs as well. So really appreciate the FDOT scheduling department adhering to this as well for us. And I can take any comments or questions if anyone has any as well. But once again, this is a spreadsheet that comes from the FDOT scheduling system. And ultimately, the project manager for each specific project can answer questions relating to the project. Andrew and I can kind of guide each and one of you as far as if there is any questions as far as, schedule, or if we wanted to make a certain comment on the project, we can relay that back to the project manager. And that sort of aspects to the project. With that being said, we can open up to any questions. Thank you.
Staff, are there any public comments on this item?
I do not have any public comments.
Okay. Do any committee members have any comments?
I have Ted has his hand raised.
Okay, Ted.
Hey, Ted.
Hi. You said this was a user-friendly spreadsheet. Do you know if it has a title region in it?
Title region.
A title region. It's something in Excel that you can put in, and when you put the title region in, it allows for the a screen reader user to go from either row to row or column to column, and it will tell you where you are, what's in the cell, and what the title of the column is. Do you know if it has that?
Ed, Ted, that's an excellent question. I know the TPA and the other counties were really asking for it to be in an Excel spreadsheet for them to utilize it. Unfortunately, the scheduling department only provided it in a PDF. And I guess when I say user-friendly, what I meant by it's simplified from all 50 scheduling activities condensed to like the top 10 that we felt as the most important scheduling activities that the BPAC would understand. But I get what you're saying as far as some sophisticated tool software application.
Well, it's not even a sophisticated tool. It's just something that if you want to have an Excel spreadsheet that's readable for everybody, it needs to be in there. So in your PDF, this is a table?
Correct. It's a spreadsheet, tabular spreadsheet.
There, I'd like to comment as well, if that's okay. So, Ted, this is for the rest of the group too, the PDF, it seems like the scheduling team who made this, the way this is exported into a PDF, it does seem like it's an older version of PDF, but we had a real tough time trying to convert it to an Excel. And so I had a real tough time trying to figure out which rows and columns line up correctly. And so, I'm sure it's difficult for any type of accessibility tool to try to break it down. What we're trying to do at the staff for the time being, obviously Larry and FDOT know that we would like it as Excel. We're going to continue to push for that. What we'll try to do at the TPA, there are some Excel converters, PDF Excel converters that seem to work a little bit better that we've been testing out. And I'm going to try to see if I can have a process in place to convert this to Excel and then publish it that way. And hopefully it'll be easier as an accessibility reader.
Anytime you need somebody to check it, I'm open to seeing if it's accessible to I use JAWS, which is a screen reader. I have my screen up, but I can't see any of you. Anyway, if you email me, I'll be glad to check it and see if it is readable.
Okay, thanks, Ted.
You bet.
Any other comments, Margie?
I don't see any other hands raised.
Okay. I had one quick question. Larry, can you talk about what the dates when we can provide input that would kind of change the design and not? I didn't quite catch that.
Eric, that's a good question. You know, it depends on what type of comment you're referring to.
Let's say a major comment.
A major comment, okay. So my opinion of a major comment is a reconstruction. So you want to, like you mentioned earlier, like reducing the median widths from 22 to 19. Mm-hmm. Right now there's 4-foot bike lanes. We want to widen it to 7-foot plus or make it a separated bike lane facility. Yeah. That's major. You know, you're ripping out curb and gutter, drainage facilities, utilities, possible landscaping, the whole works. That's a full-blown reconstruction, in my opinion. So then that needs to be prioritized and programmed as a reconstruction. So that would be a major type scope. Okay, what I was thinking of as far as minor at the multimodal scoping would be possibly bus stops. Hey, transit, you know, there's a heavy use ridership here at this location. How about adding a new bus stop location or a bus shelter? Let's relocate a bus stop from this location to this location where it's easier to cross. Maybe a missing sidewalk gap. Hey, there's a sidewalk gap from this on the north side that's a missing 1,000 feet, or detectable warnings need to be upgraded. Really need a new right turn lane here, or an addition of a new left turn lane. Signage, or needs to be like a multi-post sign that needs to be added. Maybe a crosswalk, a mid-block crosswalk with those rectangular rapid flashing beacons. Those sort of things I think can be addressed at that point in time.
Okay, the multimodal.
Yeah, I think that's a good time during those type of scope. And I can keep going on and on and on about those appropriate comments. What I would recommend you do is if there's a specific location in mind that you think this committee, the BPAC committee, says, wow, this opportunity might be a great opportunity to do this, this, and this, and we're coming up to the multimodal scope. So right now we're in July of 20. So I would start looking at July of 21 projects that were a year out and say, you know what, this might be a good opportunity for some of these type of scoping. Has this been reviewed at the department level? Reach out to Andrew, reach out to me, reach out to the project manager, sit down and talk about it. And if it incurs additional cost, then that's something that, you know, we would have to address. But I think that's a good opportunity, is to start looking at these projects that are, you know, a year, 2, 3, 4 years out, and looking at that multimodal scoping date and look over those projects in detail and say, okay, these might be good opportunities to do these type of scope improvements.
Okay. Yeah, thanks. And it's, I think one thing the TPA staff has really done a good idea, and so has the department, of bringing us projects earlier on to give comments. I think that's real. I've seen that's improved a lot over the past few years. So I think to both agencies, that's really a good thing.
Thanks, Eric.
Go ahead, Larry.
Just one more thing too. That was actually the purpose, and I really didn't specify that in the presentation. was that was really the purpose of this, because when I first started as the bike, ped, and complete streets coordinator for the district, I was getting a lot of feedback of when can the local agencies provide feedback into design. And I was noticing it was happening a lot during initial constructability, biddability. And that's when I said, you know what, the scheduling department, we really need to provide when is the best time to provide appropriate input from the local agencies and really gather the comments from this, from the BPAC and from the TPAs back to the department for feedback. And I think during that multimodal scoping that the department has created a milestone for is the ideal time for those type of scope comments. So I just want to, you know, we try to want to get everybody on board on the same page, which would be the city, the local agencies, municipalities, department, TPA, everyone on the same page when we come to these projects. So as a department representative, that's something that I'm trying to do moving forward, going on with these projects. So hopefully this tool will help us out with that. So thanks again, everyone.
And Sally, yeah. Do you have your hand raised?
Yes.
Yeah. Sally, are you on mute?
I'm not sure if I, well, maybe this is a question for FDOT, but on the project we were just discussing previously, where they're looking at possibly going from 4 to 6 lanes, that's pretty major in terms of the changes that are going on in the roadway. And what I heard other committee members suggesting, I thought, is that basically rather than just the standard, you know, 5-foot sidewalk and then the bike lane and the road, in a situation like this where you have a lot of one-way communities, in other words, not a lot of driveways coming out, and you probably have more bicycle activity than you do pedestrian activity, looking at an alternative way of arranging that, just the cross section of the road, so that you would consider, you know, two-way bike traffic and stacking it on one side. I think I heard Bob basically recommending that, and Brian saying something about, you know, this is a case where you might have more bike traffic than pedestrian. How do we make comments like that? We've done this in the past. I know we looked at State Road 441, where they looked at having all of the bicycle facility on one side and doing a two-way, and it was a similar sort of thing. You've got a canal on one side and you have limited access development on the other side. We looked at that on State Road 80/98 west of the Wellington area. I believe we also looked at it just in terms of an interchange in the Gardens area. And it's something that I don't know if this goes back to like a green book design sort of thing, but it almost seems like that when something is happening where you're looking at acquiring right-of-way or expanding lanes, that there should be some consideration of the layout of the community around it and whether or not it makes better sense to do two-way bike traffic, do it all on one side, make it much broader, rather than the sort of standard, you know, sidewalk and gutter and bike lane. Because I see a lot of roads where they're like that and you don't see any pedestrians on them at all. And then you see cyclists, some on the sidewalk and some out in the road. So I guess my question is, should we be talking about, as a committee, looking at when changes are made to the green book? So this is sort of a default mechanism, where at one point, I believe, basically had the TPA or the MPO looking for projects where it might be appropriate for this committee to make comments during this design phase, because there are expansions that that might be handled in something other than just a very standard, you know, sidewalk quarter, bike lane, expanded lanes for vehicular traffic.
Andrew, you want me to take that question?
Yes, go ahead.
Sure. Sandy, that's a good question. I think that's probably during the PD&E stages. I think Alex Estrada's project was a PD&E. Andrew, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, those PD&Es, they focus on right-of-way acquisition, environmental. And they're usually projects that are not with a triple R, which is a resurfacing project. I hope I answered that question. Andrew, do you mind filling a little bit more for me on that one, please?
Yeah, the one before us, the Atlantic Avenue study was during the PD&E phase, so it hasn't gone to design or any other phases.
Right, thank you.
Yeah, Sally, yep.
I guess what I would ask is, did we effectively make comments that FDOT would then look at and consider their cross-section with a view towards the communities that are there? Because we did have committee members making comments that I thought that's what they were getting at, is that maybe we need to have a cross-section here that's something other than that standard, you know, sidewalk on both sides, gutter, bike lane on both sides. And I think that was the general comment, is that we have a situation where we may have more cyclist use than pedestrian use, that standard design doesn't lend itself to very good pedestrian use, and that maybe there should be a consideration of stacking the cycle lanes on the canal side. Bob, I think that you brought that up. So I'm asking if that was communicated to FDOT that perhaps something different from the standard cross section should be, you know, looked at.
Andrew, we'll have to follow up with the project manager on that with Alex.
I think I see Alex is still on Zoom. You want to?
I'm here. I heard the question.
Yeah.
So yes, I think we are going to look into a different type of, you know, a separate type of facility for bikes. However, you know, being that there's a right of way that's required, you know, from Lake Worth Drainage District, that's going to depend on, you know, what type of requirements they're going to put on us. So I know they have some restrictions on what type of things they would allow on their canal side. So, but we're going to, you know, there's, as I guess you've had a presentation before from the changes in FDM, that things have, the way the FDM is written is a little bit more open to separated bike lanes and separated facilities. So we're going to take a look and see what type of typical section we can apply, coordinate with the Lake Worth Drainage District. You know, ultimately, we'll have to get right away and have to, you know, justify whatever typical we're going to go with and justify the need for this right away.
Alex, to expand on your answer and to Sally's question, whether the input that they've provided today is at what point are we in the process, I guess, I think is the question. You're responding, we're going to look into it and see if it's possible with Lake Worth Drainage District and see if the typical can be modified. But what is the timing of all that? When will the final design for this project, you know, the purpose of today's
presentation is, hey, this is coming up. This is what we're thinking about doing along the roadway, mm-hmm. the design, but, and then the BTPAC members have provided input to reconsider. So could you expand on the timing of that?
Yeah. I mean, this is a perfect timing. This is just the beginning of the study. So we are going to look at, you know, different alternatives, and the design hasn't been set. So we don't have a preferred alternative to go on to design. So this is, you know, the time that we can kind of look at different types of alternatives. So I think, you know, your comments are valid, and we'll have to look to see how we can make it work. Due to, you know, there's restrictions that we have to abide by.
Thank you. I think to Sally's question too, in regards to gathering input on projects to potentially design them differently for more bicycle and pedestrian friendly facilities. Right now, some of the projects that are in the work program or projects are our TA and LI projects. So those are already ones that we've requested for DOT to build. But the major projects like this Atlantic Avenue, we try to bring to the committees and board for that early input into the design of the study. Other projects such as upcoming resurfacing projects continue to be a little bit of a misalignment with the TPA and FDOT, because those projects, and with the county too, sometimes we learn about those projects just in a couple that are coming up, and there's not a lot of time. When we would like to potentially supplement the funding that's available for that resurfacing project to add potentially a TA or LI project or a more funding to the project to do something better, because sometimes the resurfacing projects we learn about are coming up too soon, and we say, well, we would love to see, for example, a separated bike lane or something, a shared use path along this project. And they say, oh, that's not in the scope of the budget that we have for just the resurfacing. So we would like to add funding to that. And that's where we continue to struggle a little bit with the timing of that. But I think with FDOT and then with the county, we've provided suggestions, and we try to learn of their upcoming resurfacing projects with enough anticipation to say, hey, this could be maybe a TA or LI project to add this additional facility to your resurfacing project. And so we're continuing to work on that in that respect.
Yeah, usually resurfacing projects are kind of like a maintenance type of project. You know, you're trying to resurface the road, get it back to a better condition. And if we could maybe restripe something like that, minor modifications. But if the, you know, we haven't programmed the appropriate funds or the appropriate timeline for adding an alternative route or something that requires right away or, you know, something off system, that's probably not going to be included with a RRR, which is meant to, you know, restore the pavement as well as address any like curb ramp issues, ADA type of things.
And I think in general, the good thing is that the county and the FDOT have revised their typicals to have, and their design guidelines to have, more complete streets improvements, bicycle and pedestrian facilities. So when they can, they do restripe it to have the new facilities as much as they can within their budget. When it comes to adding new facilities, I think DOT tries to add a sidewalk and that type of facility when they can within their right-of-way. They try to budget for that with the resurfacing, but sometimes it gets tricky because there isn't a sidewalk, because there's things need to be figured out with the right-of-way owner. Their right-of-way ends, and then to be able to add that sidewalk, they need to find an easement or get, you know, coordinate with the Lake Worth Drainage District or the mm-hmm. FEC or someone else, and it's not within their control. So those are details that sometimes, you know, we would like to figure out, and the resurfacing project is coming up soon. So those are things we continue to try to work with the different
partners. They don't have right of way acquisitions with a RRR type of project. Mm-hmm.
No
Okay. I think I'll just leave, I think, one note going back to kind of with Sally, a couple committee members. My observation is one of the problems we have is we don't have a pedestrian level of service when we do PD&Es. I think one of the members mentioned language is very important with inclusion, things like that. If you kind of look at the language of the department, we use the word we're accommodating bicyclists and pedestrians. And it's just until you have a level of service and a standard and you actually look at alternatives to try to achieve a level of service, all we're going to continue to get is minimum accommodation for pedestrians. 6-foot sidewalk, check the box off, no room for trees. And I don't know if that's, and obviously some places you don't have right of way, you can't do it. This Atlantic Ave, it seems like there's some real opportunities to think outside the box, do something cool. And I don't, something maybe for the TPA staff to think about is how could we incorporate that into our planning and make sure that's looked at is, there was years ago, Florida DOT actually funded a great study for pedestrian level service. They looked at the buffer width, shade trees, things like that, the speed of the cars, the volume to determine how pedestrians felt. So maybe as a long-term policy thing, that might be something we'd want to think about, which would be part of your initial engineering study. One of the things you'd evaluate is the cost, the impacts of, okay, we make the median a little narrower. It's not quite as great for cars, but we get a wider sidewalk for pedestrians, and you look at the trade-offs. So that would be my, maybe something we could think about. If there's anything else, or I'm going to go on to the next item and wrap it up. But, we just, again, Alexander and Rudy, we look forward to what you guys come back with. I think you have some opportunities to do some cool stuff. So,
okay.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree.
Yep. Okay. 4A, member comments. If you have if any member has a comment for the committee, please utilize the raise hand function of the Zoom platform to ask to be recognized. I don't see any member comments. Margie?
Oh, I have.
Oh, Patty does. He's physically raised his hand. Okay. I wasn't looking at that.
Yeah, I just didn't want to give the wrong impression. I mean, I think DTPA is doing an amazing job, and we kind of agree, and hopefully we can coordinate our efforts. The only issue we have is the vision about transit, but everything else from pedestrians to safety, they're doing an amazing job, and I think we're looking for greater cooperation. Thank you.
Okay. I don't see any other raised hands. Correct, Margie?
No, I don't. Yeah, you're correct. I don't see any other hands raised.
Okay. Summary points from the June 18th, 2020 Governing Board meeting. There's no staff presentation, but does anyone have any questions for, does any committee member have a question for staff? Okay, I don't see anything. 4C, next meeting, September 3rd, 2020, no August meeting. So we're going to find out in the future, hopefully in September we can meet in person, but is there the ad hoc committee? Do we want to, is that in August?
Yeah. The ad hoc committee is August 6th, and currently we're operating under the governor's order where public meetings can be held virtually, so which ends at the end of this month. So unless something changes, unless the governor extends that order, then that meeting would be in person. But we should know by the time we send the agenda, which would be a week before.
Okay. What was the date of the August meeting again?
August 6th. So okay. At 9, the same, the usual day we would have the BTPAC meeting, but we don't have meetings in August. So.
Okay. Okay. At this time, our committee meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everybody. So stay safe.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.